Okay, so it's that time of year. It's already been that time of year for a while that we've been blowing shofar every day. And, of course, that's not the mitzvah itself. That's a minig. It's worth a discussion on its own right. Maybe we should make time for that as well. The really fascinating ins and outs of the minig to blow shofar during the month of Elul. But the real mitzvah Menhag Torah, as we know, is the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Because I should say that a little bit more carefully. We have the mitzvah in the Torah to do something with the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. What exactly that mitzvah is not so clear. And it's the subject of a debate among the Rishonim. So I'd like to just look a little bit at some of the possibilities and some of the possible theories within the existing Shittos and what it might tell us a little bit about how this mitzvah is performed. So what's the first step? You saw the Rush and the Rambam. Essentially, there is a Shaila that the Rishonim already discussed. The Rush and the Sefer Rosh Hashanah tells us that there is a machlokes as to what is the bracha that should be recited on the shofar. What are the possibilities? And either the bracha should be, we'll skip around the question of whether it should be with something or al something. It's a other whole discussion about how brachos are formulated as far as that's concerned. But as far as the verb itself, Michael, what's the question?
Okay,
so that's actually, that's an important question in general. It's a whole discussion on Pesachim and Dav Zayin and Zeran. It's a whole story about how exactly Chazal decided which brachos have a lif formulation, which ones have an al formulation. But here there's another issue that if we skip that question, but what word is put in there? What is the mitzvah? Is the mitzvah
Shmia?
Or what's the other option? Here. So this was a machlokas Rishonim that the Rush quotes from Rabbeinu Tam in the Bahar, and the assumption seems to be, as the Rush understands it, that the machlokas has to do, and it seems like a very logical assumption, we'll see that there might be other ways to see it as well, but right now it seems like a pretty logical assumption to make, that the question is, what is the mitzvah? We have a mitzvah of shofar, so what is the mitzvah? Is the mitzvah the blowing of the shofar, so that would lead to the view of the Rishonim that the bracha should be al tkiya shofar or the tkoa shofar, or is the mitzvah the hearing of the shofar, giving us lishma or al shmias shofar? And the Rambam, if you saw, the Rambam seems to favor both from his language in the Mishnah Torah as well as in one of his tshuvas the idea that the mitzvah is what really? That the mitzvah is shmias kol shofar. And that's how we pass them as well. Our brachos today have that phrase of l'shmoa. So our question we want to try to figure out today is that the whole story? What really is the nature of the mitzvah of shofar? And if we are to take the position, which seems to be the majority view, seems to be the accepted halakha, that we focus on shmia, so what role is left for tkiya? Because it's hard to believe, and it's going to be very offensive to the Baal Tokei and my respective shuls, who thinks he's doing something very important and very public. It's hopefully he's humble about it, but still we don't want to degrade him. So we assume that he's doing something important, right? We also have all kinds of requirements, of absolute and recommended, as far as what it takes to be a Baal Tokei. It can't be just anybody. First and foremost, it has to be somebody who's chayiv in the mitzvah. Right? It has to be somebody who therefore is an adult Jewish male. Right? It has to be chayiv in the mitzvah. Women are assumed to be pturos, meitir hadin, from tkiya shofar because it's a mitzvah sashay shahazman grama. Halacha l'maisa, the practices that most women voluntarily do make sure to hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah. That's a whole other discussion as far as the nature of mitzvah sashay shahazman grama. And which mitzvahs do we have a practice that women volunteer for, which ones don't they volunteer for, it's a whole separate discussion. But, neither again, women are paturos, so therefore, in order to blow shofar, one would have to be an adult Jewish male of sound mind and body. So, that all seems to suggest that it makes a difference who blows the shofar. There's got to be some kind of a mitzvah. So, we could really ask the question that way. Now, before, assuming that we have to figure out whether it's tkiya or shmia, let's assume, okay, that it is Shmia. We know that the bracha we recite will follow the Rambam. But then, what is the role of Tkiya? So there are a number of possibilities, as we'll see. So one possibility, probably as many as six possibilities for what status we're going to give this poor Baal Tokei, who deserves a little credit. So what role are we going to give him? He's not the one doing the mitzvah. So there probably are about six possibilities. One is, you could say, I don't care what everyone else says. I posture like a man at top. I hold that I'm the one doing the mitzvah. So that's the first answer you could say, that there is a view in Rishonim that he's the one doing the mitzvah. Fine, end the conversation. Goodbye to everyone else. But if you think that the mitzvah is Shmia, then you have to have a different suggestion. Just parenthetically, if the mitzvah is Tia, so then, okay, it's great that he's doing the mitzvah, but what happens to the rest of us? It's only generally one person per shul who's doing the mitzvah then. So that's a structure that we're familiar with. We know that we find the same thing by Megillah and the like. So normally we understand it's a function of Shemaya Ka'omen. So for example, on Purim, so the mitzvah of Kriyas Megillah really is a mitzvah for all of us to read Megillah. So we don't actually read Megillah ourselves, most of us. So we assume that the mechanism of Shemaya Ka'omen is what addresses that. That because we have one person up there reading Megillah, and we're all listening, so it's ki'ilu halachically like we are reading Megillah. Shemaya Ka'omen is a fascinating halachic topic, parenthetically. Maybe we'll find a time of year to fit it in, because it's always a pleasure to talk about it, but we won't focus on it today. But whether or not Shofar works from that mechanism or not, you could question, because you could say that Shemaya Ka'omen is really about content, it's not about sounds, it's about words. So maybe you might have to find a different word for it. Maybe it's a kind of shlichus, maybe it's something else. But whatever is the proper name, we'll have to say something like that. But if the mitzvah is tkiya, so then it's tkiya through one appointed person in the congregation. He's the one doing the mitzvah, but we're all doing it through him. Sam, any question about that?
Yeah, is there no problem that the people who aren't high with respect to the women, they could be yotzei shemaya ka'omen?
No, so that direction is okay. The other direction is problematic. That our assumption is, let's say we're talking about Shemaya Ka'omen, which again, it may or may not be the right term here, but if we're talking about Shemaya Ka'omen, the requirement usually is that the one doing the speaking, or in this case the sound creating, has to be at least as chayav as all the listeners. But they can be less chayav. So it would be a problem for a woman to blow shofar for the whole shul, because she's not chayaves and she's volunteering, so that's a different level of obligation. But the other direction is okay. The assumption is that the tzibur has people with different levels of obligation. That's okay, as long as the person who is actually creating the sounds or saying the words has the maximal level of obligation relevant to anybody in the room.
So the only answer for the omen to not blow is just because she can't be able to see other people?
Yeah, I mean, for her to blow for herself shouldn't be a problem. For her to be able for other people would be an issue. There was a slight discussion that the Svar had. This is a whole separate discussion, that if we say that women are really chayavos, so then does this revert to a situation where there's an issur d'rabbanan to play an instrument on yantif? That, in general, for a person to blow a horn on yantif would be a problem. So we don't assume that we can't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. That's a whole separate discussion itself. Also, a fascinating discussion, why don't we make such a gezeirah? If we say you should blow shofar on Shabbos, then we take it further and say don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah either. That's also a separate discussion. But for now, we're assuming that the mitzvah of shofar overrides the prohibition that would normally be there for someone to blow a horn to play an instrument on yantif. There is a discussion so does that mean that we should say, all right, so it's only a real kias mitzvah that we allow, or do we allow practicing? Do we allow children to play with the shofar? Do we allow women to blow shofar? Do we allow men to blow only for women? That might itself be a problem, because if it's only women in the audience, which happens sometimes, right? So let's say if somebody's unable to come to shul, and people go to blow shofar for either a group of women or a single woman, so there is a discussion in Poskim, she's not really obligated, so is that justified for him to blow shofar again, when it's theoretically a problem on yantif to do this? There's a whole literature about that. So there is a subject to discuss, but strictly speaking, that's the basic contours of the issue. Hi.
Similarly, can a woman blow for other women, or is it that the obligation has to be through a man?
Right, so the truth is, actually, I said too quickly a second ago that the ownership to blow for other women, because I did kind of say that a minute ago without really taking it through, because the truth is there is more to say about it, as we'll see in a second, that in other mitzvahs, theoretically, that should be true. Here, there is a little bit of an extra complication, which we'll discuss in a few minutes. So this mitzvah, as we'll see in a couple ways, is unique as far as that's concerned, and we'll talk about that. So the first possibility, like we see, is like we assume, there's basically six possibilities as to how to characterize, or maybe there's more, but we'll discuss six possibilities, time permitted, as to how to characterize the mitzvah of shofar. So the first possibility is that it's tkia, and that Baal Tam Peh is acting on behalf of all of us. But again, that's not the majority view among the Rishonim, so it seems to be that it's most likely that it is a mitzvah of shmiya, and then the question is, what role? Clearly there is some role, otherwise we wouldn't have standards as to who it is. We clearly have halachas regulating who blows the shofar. So why is that the case? Why does it make a difference who blows the shofar? Again, some of these halachas are likuva. The ones that it has to be a mechuyav bedaver. And then there are other preferences we talk about. It should be a yirei shamayim, it should be this, it should be that. But those aren't necessarily absolutely live or die. Those are other levels of requirements. But we simply clearly do care who blows the shofar. So to say that it's all of the shmiya doesn't seem to be the case. So this issue of why it is that you need you need these requirements that we're paying attention to who blows the shofar, so that prompts us, yes, so what role does he play? It's interesting, parenthetically, that the Rush has a proof that the mitzvah really is in the shmiya by the fact that there is a Mishnah, and the Mishnah is very significant because the Mishnah comes up a lot in the halacha, which is also a whole separate discussion. If you want to have any of these separate discussions, please let me know. We'll be glad to find some time to schedule them in, but we can't have them all today. But the major source for discussions about microphones in terms of Kiyum Mitzvahs, not in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, it's a whole separate question in terms of whether or not the possibility of using microphones at Shabbos and Yom Tov, but in terms of fulfilling mitzvahs of speech and of hearing through microphones. So really, the major, major mucker is this Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if somebody blows the shofar, hatokeya and tocha bor, tocha dus, if somebody is in some kind of a pit or a cave, and he blows shofar, so the Mishnah says, so is he yotzei the mitzvah shofar? So he says, well, it depends. That if he hears the call of the shofar, then that's okay. So he's yotzei. If he hears the call of bar, if he hears what seems to be an echo, so then that's a problem. Then he's not yotzei. So that's the major source discussed in terms of microphones, because the assumption is their microphone is not actually carrying the original sound to you, is recreating the sound somewhat like an echo, and therefore maybe that's what the Mishnah is talking about. A very debatable point. Again, let me know if you want to talk about that, but for now, just passing it by. But the Rush says from that Mishnah that you see that here the guy's blowing the shofar for himself. And still, we ask the question, well, does the note say? Well, it depends. If he hears this, then yes. If he hears that, then no. Says the Rush, you see that the mitzvah, even regarding the person who's doing the blowing of the shofar, the mitzvah seems to be that you have to hear the shofar. So then again, so why do we care who blows? So here there is a comment that Shagas Aryeh has, Shagas Aryeh in his essays. Shagas Aryeh also wrote a sefer on Masechet Rosh Hashanah called Turiyevan, and a few other Masechets. But in addition to that, so he has many essays on Rosh Hashanah and his sefer Shagas Aryeh. So there he talks about this question. And he has the assault, which many others accepted as well, that yes, it's true that you have to hear the shofar, that's the mitzvah, but what does it mean to hear the shofar? Because you have to hear a kol shel chiyuv. You have to hear a sound, or others will phrase it, a kol shel mitzvah. There's two halves of the sentence. And you have to hear the shofar, so one half is the mitzvah is to hear it. But the other half is kol shofar. So what's considered to be kol shofar? Not just any sound that's generated, but it's got to be a sound of obligation, a sound of mitzvah. Otherwise, you cannot fulfill the mitzvah through that. There's an interesting conversation in a sefer called the Yunan Bahalacha, a couple of volumes written by a Talmud Chacham by the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Shmaya. So he took note of the fact that when it comes to a sukkah, so we don't find this requirement. The Gemara says explicitly in the Sefer Sukkah, Sukkah's Ganbach, sharing that you could build a sukkah does not have to be built by somebody who's obligated in the mitzvah. So why don't we say that the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah, you can fulfill that mitzvah with a sukkah built by somebody else, somebody who's not obligated. So the mitzvah of listening to the shofar, why don't we also let you listen to a call that was generated by somebody who's not obligated in the mitzvah of shofar? So he suggests a distinction that the sukkah may be built by whoever it's built by, but once it's built, then it continues to stand on its own, it continues to be there. It has its own identity that is disconnected from the lack of obligation of the person who built it. But the shofar, the sound, is ephemeral. So whoever is blowing the shofar has to keep doing that in order for the kol to remain. So therefore, there is a continuing association with the kol and the person creating it, which is different than sukkah. So when it comes to the shofar, it's got to be a kol shofi. Okay. So if that's the case, so then that leads us to the conclusion that, as we said a minute ago, the Rashi's proof indicates that even the person who's blowing the shofar, he's not fulfilling the mitzvah through his act of blowing it. He's fulfilling the mitzvah through the fact that he also hears the sound that he is blowing. So he's doing a necessary step. He's creating the kol shofiyah, but that's not really his mitzvah. That's what's necessary for us to have a mitzvah, including him himself. But even he performs the mitzvah through the act of listening. So what's the reason for that? What's the value of that? Why should the mitzvah be defined that way? It's not true by other mitzvahs. So for example, we mentioned before Megillah. So Megillah, really the mitzvah is Kriya. That's the mitzvah. And the rest of us fulfill it through Shemei Ka'on. Kiddush, other such mitzvahs, the mitzvah really is, it seems to be, to say the idea. Not to listen. Shofar seems to be different if the mitzvah is actually to listen rather than to say. Why do you have this structure? So some suggest, Rabbi Menachem Ganachri, I just saw him a few minutes ago at the sex event, so he mentioned that in his sefer Gan Shoshanim, he has an essay about this, where he notes the quotes from Salvation, that we're all probably familiar with the statement of the Rambam. The Rambam is Hilchos Tshuva, has the imagery that's often quoted on Rosh Hashanah and around this time of year, because it's one of the most popular ideas regarding shofar, that the shofar is compared to an alarm clock. The idea of Uru, Yushenin, Yushen Oschad, that we should wake up, those of us who are sleeping, we should be aroused. So the whole nature of the shofar is that it's kind of got to hit you from outside. And you're going about your life, and the shofar comes and knocks you awake. So therefore, even the person blowing the shofar himself experiences the mitzvah that way. He experiences it as something that comes from outside, even though he's the one who's causing it, just like the rest of us. That's the nature of the mitzvah. It has to be, so to speak, somewhat passive as far as it comes to get us. So that's an interesting idea, just to kind of illustrate the point. So this relates to the point we asked before about the women blowing shofar. So there's an interesting halacha that there is something called a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin, a half slave, a half a free person. Now when I say there is something called that, I really mean there is nothing called that, because there is no actual person who is or really was a chatzi eved, a chatzi ben chorin, because the Gemara says that even if one existed, it would mean that he had two masters and one in freedom and the other one didn't. So the Gemara says, this is the Gemara of Daf Yomi, the Gemara in the beginning of Chagiga, that it wasn't going to work, it's not going to be a life. So they would be kofed, they'd force the other one, the other master, to release him also. So why does a Chatzi Yad V'Chatzi Ben Chorin exist at all? He exists to be a nafkamina. It's useful for lumbus, that there are questions which you can illustrate really only through a Chatzi Yad V'Chatzi Ben Chorin. You can really call him nafkamina man. He's there for the Mechas Chinuch. He's there for the Lamdush Shvekis that come up about the Chatzi Yad V'Chatzi Ben Chorin, because where else would you get a construct like this of somebody who's half Chayiv Mitzvahs and half not Chayiv Mitzvahs? So it's a great vehicle to discuss Lamdush issues. So what's the story with a Chatzi Yad V'Chatzi Ben Chorin? So presumably you cannot appoint this person to be the Baal Tokeya for the shul, because as we said before, he's less obligated than the population of the shul in general, because half of him is obligated, half of him is not obligated. So you could call that either 50%, or you could call it a suffix of 100 or 0, however you want to relate to it. But the point is that he's on a different level than the average man in the congregation who's 100% chayav. So we understand, okay, so you can't appoint such a person to be the Baal Tokeya in the shul. But presumably, if he wants to blow shofar for himself, he should be able to, right? Because he's at least as chayiv as he is. So he should be able to blow shofar for himself which in general should be the case by most mitzvot, that a person should at least be able to fulfill their own mitzvah, because they're as obligated as they're obligated. So it shouldn't be an issue. But here you find that the Torah says that when it comes to Megillah, you're right, when it comes to Megillah, the Chatziyah v'chatzi ben Charer, he can't read the Megillah for the shul, but he could read for himself, he'll be Yotze in his own level. But when it comes to Shofar, writes the Torah that he can't be mostly the shul, he can't blow Shofar for everyone else, and he also can't blow Shofar for himself. My high, why can't he blow Shofar for himself? He can perform a mitzvah on his own behalf, he can't do that. So Rabbi Pesach Frank has a tshuva about this in his Tshuva's Hartzvi, in which he suggests that the issue is that this is an unusual kind of situation. That if you have a mitzvah like Megillah, the mitzvah is Kriya, the mitzvah is to read it. Okay, so this individual is reading Megillah, and whatever part of him is obligated is fulfilling it through his own action. But Shofar is unique. That Shofar, the mitzvah is to hear a kol shel chiyuv. So the sound has to be generated by somebody who's obligated. So here you have the chatziyad v'chatzi ben charer. Half of him is going to want to fulfill shofar, so to speak. He's partially obligated in shofar. And what's the nature of that obligation? It's to hear a kol shel chiyuv. So if he's not capable of generating a kol shel chiyuv, so then it's a problem for him to use his own shofar blowing to fulfill the mitzvah. It's a kind of situation which is really different from almost all other mitzvahs. Okay, so that's
that relates to the woman.
That relates to the woman also. So presumably she's going to voluntarily fulfill shofar. She really wants to also have a kol shel chiyuv, presumably. And you could argue maybe the status is a little different. You know, that here at least she could voluntarily presumably she could volunteer on any level she wants. So chatzi ever chatzi mechari and half in sky is going to want a real kol shel chiyuv. You could quibble, but it's an interesting, kind of question. So in any event, so that gives us two ways to see it. Okay, so we could say that essentially it is either the mitzvah is tekiya or the mitzvah is shmiya, and tekiya is there so that we should have a kol shel chiyuv. What's the third possibility? The third possibility is discussed by Rav Shechter Shlita in the Sefer Eretz Hatzvi, where he quotes a mahalach from the Salvation. A very important mahalach for other things as well. That, and this kind of questions the Rashi's fundamental analysis of the whole story. And we said at the beginning that the machlokas about bracha, what bracha to make, like the Rashi understands, probably is about, very straightforward, is about what is the mitzvah, is the mitzvah to be or shmir. But we also alluded to the fact that there might be other ways to see it. So this is what the Rabbi apparently suggested, that maybe it's not really the question. Maybe we both agree that Tekiya and Shmiya both have a role to play. And we can even agree as to what that role is. And it goes as follows, that most mitzvot, most of the 613 mitzvot, probably a good 98% of them, or close to that. So you perform the mitzvah, and through that performance, you fulfill them. You do the action, you do a ma'aseh ha-mitzvah. And the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah is also the kiyum ha-mitzvah. So if that's the case, so fine, very good, we don't have anything to talk about. You make the bracha on the action and the fulfillment at the same time. But there is the occasional mitzvah where there is a separation between the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah and the kiyum ha-mitzvah. That there is one action that is the physical deed for the mitzvah, and there is a fulfillment that is separate. Now, we find this most often, really, by mitzvahs that are more emotionally based. So, for example, we spoke about a little bit, I think it's past Thursday, right? About, it was more or last Thursday, spoke about one of the recent parshas here, about the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif, and about eating flesh. So there, for example, the Rav explained in that context also that the mitzvah of eating meat, of drinking wine, saying that that's Simchas Yontif, what we really mean is that Simchas Yontif is really an emotional state, to be happy. So that's the Kiyum HaMitzvah. When one is happy in a Yontif, that's the fulfillment of the mitzvah. But that is an emotional state. So if we say you have to do something to perform the mitzvah, so what is it that you have to do in order to bring that about. So you can't just turn our emotions on and off. So if we have an action, the action has to be that we do some act which we can reasonably associate with this emotion. So if we understand that people like meat and wine and clothes and things like that, so doing these actions are likely to bring about the emotion of simchasyanti, and that's the mitzvah. So the act, the maisa ha-mitzvah, is eating meat and drinking wine, etc. And the kiyum ha-mitzvah, that's the emotional state that comes from that. So this is slightly different, but it's not that different. That maybe we should say, like we mentioned a few minutes ago, as far as the whole Talmud of the mitzvah, that the kiyum ha-mitzvah comes from hearing the shofar be blown, the hisorus that comes from hearing the shofar blown. But the maisa ha-mitzvah, the action of the mitzvah, that would seem to be the tkiya shofar. So the tkiya shofar is an action that's done in order to bring about the kiyum ha-mitzvah that comes through the hearing of the shofar. So based on this idea, the suggestion was as follows. That maybe all the Rishonim agree to what's going on here. That blowing the shofar is the maisa ha-mitzvah. And hearing the shofar is the tkiya ha-mitzvah. And the machlokas is really only about the question of the bracha. And that in general, one could ask the relationship between brachos and mitzvos. Is the mitzvah, is it the maisa ha-mitzvah that gets a bracha when there's a separation? Or is it the kiyum ha-mitzvah? Like, for example, the whole discussion about Sfiras HaOmer, the question of Sfiras HaOmer is one bracha or 49, is one mitzvah or 49 mitzvos. So you might say, well, it's clearly 49 mitzvos because we make 49 brachos. So maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe the bracha is associated with the maisa ha-mitzvah, not with the kiyum ha-mitzvah. Maybe that's its own discussion. So that's also a separate topic. But you could ask that question here. Maybe the machlokas ha-rishonim is just what part of the bracha, what part of the mitzvah gets the bracha? The action or the kiyum? Now, if you're ready for a particularly lumdish point, this could affect a few other details in Hilchos Shofar. So, for example, here's a lumdish point. So, what about if you have a stolen shofar? So, a stolen shofar, first of all, highly not recommended for many, many reasons. It's not the way to go about things for multiple reasons. But to get very technical about it, in addition to the Aveira, in addition to the Xela, in addition to all the problems, but is it a technical mitzvah haba b'aveira? We have a status that a mitzvah that's performed through an aveira is considered to be inherently disqualified in addition to all the other issues. So is that true by a stolen shofar? Is the sound, so to speak, is the sound trick? So says the Rambam, against other Rishonim like the Hagos Sashri, but the Rambam's position is that a stolen shofar, as bad as that is, for all of the relevant reasons, but the sound itself is still valid. The mitzvah is not technically a mitzvah habadi aveira. Why? It says because the mitzvah of shofar is in the shmiyah, is actually in the sound that comes out of the shofar. So what's stolen here? The shofar is stolen. But the sound is not stolen, it says the Rambam Machidish, and the call din geza, that sound, the ephemeral sound, is not subject to a status of being stolen. Now this parenthetically, so we mentioned one Mishnah is relevant for the whole microphone discussion. This Rambam, you might think, is relevant for the whole downloading music issue, things like that. You know, is there a status of stolen agave sound, agave something ephemeral? So that is a discussion. There are those who point to this Rambam as part of the discussion. Question whether or not it's really what he's talking about or not, but that's here he's talking about actually physically stealing an item. The question of how does it address the status of what comes out of it, but you could also ask the question, is it possible to steal the sounds themselves? So that's a discussion which some point to this Rambam. So this could affect, to explain a little bit more how it works in a very lumdish sense. So Leitchik noted as follows, that we have a little bit of a detour here for some intense lumbies. So this will also help us, that we're talking about Sukkot as well for a minute, because we usually don't have an opportunity to talk about Sukkot because we don't have Yeshiva after Yom Kippur, so there's so much about Rosh Hashanah and Kippur to talk about. It's hard to have an opportunity to talk about Sukkot and Sukkot Torah. Let's talk about sukkahs for a second. So when it comes to sukkah, so there is a whole discussion that there is a Tosfos in Sechah Sotah in Daf Tes. The Tosfos asks the question, why is it that the Gemara over there in Daf Tes, the Gemara quotes a pasuk to tell us that a sukkah gzula is pasuk, that a stolen sukkah is no good. So asks Tosfos, why do we need a pasuk for that? We know. Mitzvah babi avera. You can't have a mitzvah that comes about through a transgression. So of course the stolen sukkah is no good. So why do I need a pasuk? So Tosfos has their own answer. With the Minchas Chinuch, I think it's Mitzvah Shin Chavei, the Minchas Chinuch has a whole different approach, very lavdish approach, which essentially, to put it in brisker terms, as the Rebbe explained it, is basically as follows. That thinks the issue is like this, that if one would steal a sukkah and sit in that sukkah, so he would not, the halacha of mitzvah habavi aveiru would mean that he's not in fulfillment of a mitzvah. He's not scoring any points upstairs. Mitzvah habavi aveiru would mean scoring points with an aveiru. But it wouldn't be like he's eating in his living room. And we know that in sukkahs we have kind of a complicated relationship to the mitzvah of sukkah, as far as whether it's a mitzvah saseh or a lo saseh, because it seems like it's a mitzvah saseh, something you're supposed to do, but we sometimes relate to it a little bit like it's a lo saseh. You're not allowed to eat outside of sukkah. You're not allowed to eat in your house. So if you were to eat in a stolen sukkah, so, all right, so you wouldn't get any mitzvah for that. But is it like not meeting at all? No mitzvah points, no nothing positive? Or would we say it's like eating in your living room? It's a bitul aseh. It's like eating in a total non-sukkah. So it says in the Minchas Chinuch, you would have thought from the halacha mitzvah babi aveira, it wouldn't be like you're eating in your living room. You're eating in a sukkah. It just happens to be you're getting no credit for that. You're not getting any mitzvah for eating in a sukkah because it's a mitzvah babi aveira. But it's not like you're eating outside the sukkah. You're eating in a sukkah, you're just not getting any schar mitzvah. So based on that, the Rav said, what do you see? You see, the whole idea of mitzvah habavi aveira is that it attacks the kiyum ha-mitzvah. That you can't be mekayim ha-mitzvah. You can't score any points. You can't get any schar mitzvah through an aveira. But the maisa ha-mitzvah, the structure of the mitzvah, in this case, literally the structure of the mitzvah, that remains there independent of mitzvah habavi aveira. That's why you need a special pasuk to say, slipping zula, no, it's mamish no good, it's like you're reading your living room, it's a non-sukkah, it doesn't exist. So, using that framework, he said, that's the story by Shofar as well. That mitzvah habavi aveira is relevant to a kiyum ha-mitzvah. It's not relevant to the action of the mitzvah. So in this case, the shofar is stolen, but the sound is not stolen. So the sound is where the kiyum ha-mitzvah is. That kiyum is not technically affected by mitzvah habavi aveira. Now, of course, it's problematic on so many levels. I'm not saying it's okay to do. But just as far as this technicality of mitzvah habavi aveira, it's not going to extend to the sound, which is ki'ilu, it's coming from its own place. So this affects other things as well, the question of whether the shofar is considered to be a chefza shel mitzvah. Is there a isser hana on a shofar? Whole discussion on the Avram. Is there a halacha that there shouldn't be a chatzitza between your mouth and the shofar, like you find by other mitzvot? The Mishnah says that you can't have a shofar that has gold overlaid, wakum hanacha sapad, which is gold in the place where one puts his mouth. So does that disqualify the shofar? The answer is yes. The question is why? Is it because it somehow distorts the sound? Or, as some seem to understand, it's because of the chatzitza, that there's an interruption between your mouth and the shofar. So that seems to suggest that the shofar is a chepsa shel mitzvah. So that was debatable. Is that the case? Should we say that no, the mitzvah is actually performed through the call. And the shofar is an instrument towards the mitzvah. So essentially, there's more to say about that, but that'll give us our third mahalach as far as how to understand the view of the Rishonim as what the mitzvah of shofar is. The fourth mahalach is really very similar to the third mahalach. The difference between the third mahalach and the fourth mahalach is that the third is said in brisker terminology and the fourth is said in sumachar terminology. But other than that, they're very similar. But we'll give each yeshiva its due. So the Safach of the Rebbe was the Abenezer, the great Abenezer, the author of the Ebru Talmud of the Shabbos, those who learned the Shabbos last year. And the author of a very important work of Shilas and Tshuva is the Abenezer. So the Abenezer has a Tshuva in which he discusses that there is a practice that we have nowadays that when the Baal Tekeya makes the bracha on the shofar, so he covers up the shofar with a talus while he's making the bracha. And it's only after he finishes the bracha that he uncovers the shofar. The Abenezer has a tshuva, but he says, why is that? Why do we do that? Why do you cover up the shofar? So he discusses, in that tshuva, he discusses the nature of the mitzvah of shofar. And he notes a different halacha, and this is also going to be a parsha. So next week will be Hazinu, Shabbat Shuva, and then Bayelech. So the last mitzvah in the Torah, mitzvah Taryag, from the count of the Chinuch, is the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah. You have to write a Sefer Torah. But some of the Rishonim explained that really the mitzvah is to have a Sefer Torah, that's the whole point. But you have to write a Sefer Torah in order to have it. So if you buy a Sefer Torah, so then that's also acceptable. It's really about the end game, about possessing it, so buying it also works. However, apparently buying it works, but inheriting it does not work. Which is hard to understand the distinction, because they both result in the same thing. If you inherit something, you own it. So what's the difference between buying something or inheriting it? At the end of the day, you own it. So the explanation that's suggested is that even though the mitzvah is really done through the ownership of the Sefer Torah, there can't be a mitzvah that doesn't have any physical action associated with it. You have to do something in order for the mitzvah to take place. So when it comes to owning a Sefer Torah, so yes, it's about owning it, but you have to do something in order to own it. You can't own it passively. So if you buy it, if you write it, for sure you did something. If you buy it, you also did something. If you inherit it, hopefully you didn't do anything in order for that situation to happen. Hopefully it was only a passive situation by which you come to inherit something. So therefore, that's the problem. If you can't have a mitzvah that just happens passively, you got to do something.
Alright, so if someone gave it to you,
you accepted it. You made the kinyan of accepting. Presumably that's the same thing as buying it. You don't have to actually pay money. You pay money is a separate involvement. So when it comes to shofar, he says the same thing. That the mitzvah, as we've seen, the mitzvah is shmiyat shofar. It's all about that. Right? That's where we found the hashkafic significance of hearing the shofar. That seems to be the mitzvah. However, again, that could be passive. So you can't have a mitzvah that is purely passive. You have to do something. You have to have some type of mitzvah. So that's what the kiyas shofar is. Now again, you see, it's not so different from how we just said about the mitzvah mitzvah, the kima mitzvah. It's just the sakach over terminology versus the brisket terminology. It's not a radically different mahalach, but it's interesting also because of where the conversation goes. So then, yeah?
I mean, the non-passiveness of shofar is simply that someone else is.
Right, someone's got to blow a shofar. And that, okay, so we'll use shlichus so that everyone else is also active. But there's got to be some maestro somewhere. Mitzvahs don't just happen by themselves. Hi.
Okay, I'm kind of speculating here, but if you kind of turn the hearing into more of an action type of thing, like maybe when someone's blowing, you cover your ears and then open them so you perform some kind of an action, would that work?
Well, you know, you could ask the Abenezer as far as the lumpus, but it's hard to know. But you do find a discussion that not so much uncovering your ears, but leaning in is sometimes called maisa as well. You know, that, I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, also in Parashat Shir, the idea that if you're obligated to stop yourself from listening to Lashon Hara. And so that, the Chavetz Chaim does have a whole discussion about if somebody finds himself stuck in a scenario where Lashon Hara is being spoken, he can't do anything about it, he can't leave. So to what extent, you know, leaning in more, what extent is there a maisa that becomes part of this. You do find in some areas of halacha somewhat of a discussion about listening as an action. So you could wonder how exactly he would assess that if it makes a difference. But theoretically, this is how he has the scenario. So he says that basically what had to be was that the Torah's formulation of the mitzvah then has to include both. Because the mitzvah can't be passive, so it has to be that really the tekiah and the shmiyah are both a part of the mitzvah, but the shmiyah is really what the mitzvah is about. And the tekiah is there, so it won't be a passive experience.
So that's how he explained covering up the
shul. So then he goes on to say that since that's true, so really you could make a bracha on either part. You could make the bracha on the shmiya or on the tkiyah because they're both a part of the mitzvah. But we'd rather make the bracha on shmiya because shmiya is really what it's about. That really tells us the essence of the mitzvah. So if we have to choose, we prefer to make a bracha on shmiya. But the problem is, if we're going to do that, so then we have a Friday night kiddush problem. And on Friday night we make kiddush, so we cover up the challahs, and Yerushalmi and the Yerushalmi have a couple of theories why we cover up the challahs, and my favorite one I want to talk about is that we're worried about embarrassing the challahs. That since you have the ability, theoretically, to make kiddush on a challah Friday night, but we most often pass it over in order to make kiddush on wine instead, so we don't want the challahs to be embarrassed, so we cover it up. It shouldn't have to watch when the challahs get passed. It shouldn't have to watch when the wine gets chosen for the bracha instead of the challah. So says the Abinezer, it's the same thing. That here you could have made the bracha on shmiya, on tkiya rather, it's an equal candidate because it's also part of the mitzvah, but it's not ideal. We want the shmiya to really get center stage because that's where the concept is. So therefore we cover up the shofar, the tool of the tkiya gets covered up during the time of the bracha, just like the challah gets covered up during kiddush. During kiddush. It's a kiddush about kiddush. So it's a fascinating idea. The Minchas Elazar, Munkach Rebbe, probably the other most prominent Hasidic Shefer, Shalos and Chubas, probably the top two, the Minchas Elazar and the Abinezer. So Minchas Elazer often disagrees with the Abinezer, so here he takes a very sharp issue. He says he doesn't think that's the reason at all, it's Kabbalistic reasons. If it was really about that, we should cover up the shofar blower, not the shofar, he doesn't agree with the whole thing. But so there's a whole debate, if you want to read, between the Abinezer and the Minchas Elazar about the suggestion that he had. So that would be essentially our fourth mahalach. The fifth mahalach that we'll just say very simply because it's pretty straightforward, but the Shuvas Ksav Sofer and the Sefer Yom Truah seem to understand that it's also not radically different, it's simpler, that maybe there's simply two halves of the mitzvah. Maybe the mitzvah is both. The mitzvah is the Tkiyah and the Shmiyah, so the person going has to be a Bar Kibbutz, and the person listening is also fulfilling the mitzvah, and it's all one good challenge, and it's all well and good, and everybody's happy. It's perhaps the simplest approach.
So why is there a bracha on the Shmiyah?
So then the question again could be like the Abinezer said, so we could argue about it, right, what the bracha should be, and that's why there's a fight, that we both some equal partners, and we could say, all right, so what is the concept really about? You could say a sixth mahalach, which would also involve us looking to the mitzvah of Sukkah for a second. That there is a comment of the Netziv. The Netziv in his commentary to the Sheoltas, the Hayimek Shala in Sheolta Kuf Samach Tes, as what might be one of his more, as like I said, one of his more famous comments. The Netziv has a chiddush halacha that's quoted by many others. It's interesting, actually, it's a little synergy. I saw suggested once, I think there was an Alfred has suggested along these lines, that this might be relevant to our introduction to Mesechus Ksuvos. So we'll go back to that for a second. That the Netziv basically suggests that there's an extra category that we're not always aware of. That we know there are some things that are mitzvot, some things that we're obligated to do. And sometimes you have a hechsher mitzvah, something that you have to do so that you will be in a position to fulfill the mitzvah. So generally you say that a hechsher mitzvah is not a mitzvah. A mitzvah has rules and status and brachos and things like that, and a hechsher mitzvah does not have all those things. However, he says that there is an in-between category. It's when something is referred to in Chumash. So that's called a hechsher mitzvah haksuva b'kra. That a hechsher mitzvah that's not just a hechsher mitzvah that, well, you realize you're going to have to do this in order to perform the mitzvah, but it has an elevated status because the Chumash actually refers to it. So the Netziv asserts that there are not gemidas in that case. And the Hechsher Mitzvah has certain dinim that are different from Hechsher Mitzvah, Hechsher B'kura rather, has kind of a quasi-mitzvah status. And there are certain nafkaminas that theoretically there could be a bracha on it. There's a concept of mitzvah bo, yosem yushlucho, there is a preference that you do the mitzvah itself rather than have somebody else do it. In general, a hechsher mitzvah usually will be one where shluchos is possible, because it usually means that it's result-oriented rather than action-oriented. This is usually it'll be a mitzvah where shlichus is an option, but still we'll say mitzvah bo yosim b'shlucho, because it's got a quasi-mitzvah status to it. So you could say, this is what he assumes is a story by Sukkah. I don't have to figure out what the story is by Sukkah. Again, we'll stuff some Sukkah material here also, because it's not like you have much more opportunity. So Sukkah, you know, is a general discussion. Ramah says that after Yom Kippur, so the first mitzvah you do is that you should do a mitzvah right away after Yom Kippur, so you should start building the Sukkah. So it's a little bit of a difficult point, because it's not clear that building the Sukkah is a mitzvah. So I have to figure out exactly what he's getting at, but this is what the Netziv says, it's a quasi-mitzvah. It's a hashem mitzvah, suva makra, that is something that gets extra significance. That I was alluding to before, is that we talked in our introduction to Ksubas about the machlokas harishonim, whether kedushin is a mitzvah or not. Is kedushin a mitzvah, or is it really a hashem mitzvah, to the mitzvah peravu, like the Russians understand. So some suggest that maybe it should have the status that the Netziv's words should be relevant here as well, that we should say that it is a hechsher mitzvah, it's there for the purpose of peruvu, but it's ksuvim v'kra, that it is mentioned in Chumash, ki yitach yishisha, so to use the word Pashas to say it, so it has the status of hechsher mitzvah, ksuvim v'kra, so maybe it's the quasi mitzvah status, which also works out for the Rishonim Musay, and the Gemara basically seems to say that there is a concept of mitzvah v'ayosu v'shlucho by the Kiddushin. So even if you say that it's not really a mitzvah, so according to the Netziv, and if you want to extend the Netziv's point to the Kiddushin, so it works, because the Netziv says that the Hashem v'shlucho also has a policy of mitzvah v'ayosu v'shlucho.
Is the Gemara explicit about that?
Yeah, so how do you explain that? So
according to the other opinion,
right, so according to the Rush, you have to ask, right? So the Gemara seems to call it a mitzvah, which the Rishonim talk about. Not only talks about his discussion, but according to the Netziv, so you can say either way, that either it's a mitzvah or a hashem mitzvah, but it's the hashem mitzvah that's mentioned in the Chumash, and he writes, and after me, that you have within a mitzvah of Yosemite Mishluva.
He raises doubt, where he says that it should be as a hashem mitzvah.
He doesn't talk about Kiddushin, others talk about Kiddushin, but he has this as an afkamina for Hashem Mitzvah Kra, so that could perhaps address that issue. So just want to add one point, so this is also a little bit of synergy for our Chumash here from 2 days ago, from Thursday, and the discussion of Parshas Kisavo. So we're working off the assumption that we basically just said that we have six opinions is that we'll have a mitzvah of shofar works out. Really, one of them seems to say tekiah, and the five others all seem to prefer shmir, or exclusively, or mostly, or somewhat more than tekiah. So we gave the explanation that maybe it's because shofar is an alarm clock, and that has to be essentially somewhat of a passive experience, that the tekiah comes to you from the outside, and even the Baal Tokeya is experiencing it that way. So perhaps you could say, just explain the other side a little bit, in a drasha that's a little bit relevant to what we spoke about on Thursday. So we spoke about, if you recall, that whole discussion about the mitzvah that was given to the Jews to set up stones with the writing of the Torah. So I think I quoted then the Sikha that Rav Nevenstein has about this, that the idea is that the Jews have to recreate Maamar Har Sinai at that stage. That the Jews have to, first they receive the Torah somewhat passively, originally at Har Sinai, and then when they come into the land, they have to recreate, restage that experience. And he had given some suggestions as to why that is, maybe because there's a new generation, didn't have them start with the previous generation, or because going into Eretz Yisrael creates a new level of obligation. But you could also add to that, that maybe it was necessary, I don't remember what you said this on Thursday, but you could add to it that maybe it's necessary that, especially as we transition from the miraculous life of the Midbar to the more activist life of living in Eretz Yisrael, so we have to not only have the Torah given to us, but we have to assertively do the job of reaffirming the Torah ourselves. Not only be the recipients, but be the ones who write it down, be the ones who actively do it. So maybe when it comes to shofar as well, you could say that that's also the idea that the Devital happens to go on to say that this idea of keeping the recreating of Sinai is relevant also to shofar. And maybe we could build on that and say that if the idea is that we have to kind of actively take hold of the moment, which I think is a very major theme with a shofar. So then perhaps we could say that it's an alarm clock, not in the sense that the alarm clock that wakes you up, but in the sense of your cell phone alarm that you can't turn off unless you hit it. So the purpose of the alarm is not only to wake you up from sleeping, the purpose of the alarm is to keep you from falling back to sleep once you're already awake. And that maybe that's also the idea of the shofar, is to help us to hold on to the moment so that we make sure to be active about it rather than being passive. And that we have the Yom HaDin, we have the Rosh Hashanah, and the shofar is blown so that we should say, okay, we're going to hold on to this day, so we're going to make sure to maximize it and to utilize it the way that's necessary. And if that's the case also, we could explain the minhag that we have to blow shofar throughout Elul, perhaps also in the same spirit, that Elul is precious, that we have these days that are not meant to just pass by. They're meant to be days that we actively use for the opportunity of tshuva. So we blow the shofar to remind us that this day is passing. We have to take this day and use it for productive means so that it should actually be a state of tshuva that's going to be successful and it's going to be productive. So perhaps we could say that to whatever extent there is a view in the Rishonim that the mitzvah is davke tkiya, or to whatever extent there's a preference for tkiya within the various possibilities, and we saw that it was a machlokes, but to whatever extent that exists, maybe that's an expression of the idea that no, it's davke should not be passive, that going shofar is about taking hold of the moments of Rosh Hashanah, making sure that we actively are machshavit, and that we actively put our full attention towards it, so that we can be zocher b'nim. So I'll just quickly review what we spoke about. So what we see, so we saw that there was an achlokes harishonim as to what bracha to make on shofar, whether bracha should revolve around shmir or tkiya, and the Rosh assumes that the logic would have indicated perhaps that the question is the mitzvah tkiya or shmir, and the Rambam seems to prefer shmir, and our bracha that we say nowadays also seems to indicate that we pass from shmir. So the question is, all right, so if the mitzvah is shmir, what role is there for the poor Baal Tokeya who deserves some credit, so where does he fit in? So we saw basically six possibilities. The first possibility is to say, like Rebbeinu Tam, that Taka, he's the one doing the mitzvah, the rest of us is the Shiloh, so we said maybe it's Shlichus or Shnei Ka'on or whatever it is, but maybe it's just him doing the mitzvah. That was mahalach number one. Second mahalach was to say that the mitzvah is shmir, but the shmir has to be a kol shochir, the second Shagas Aryeh said. And the Rosh essentially led us to this point by pointing out the Mishnah that says that if you blow shofar yourself in a pit and you hear the sound of the echo rather than the sound of the shofar, you're not yotze even though you're the one blowing it. We mentioned this right now, explaining, say, for Gan Shoshan and for the Rav, that the idea is that shofar is supposed to be an alarm clock and therefore it has to hit you passively. And then we saw that this could also explain, as you see by Safrank has in the Tshuva, why it is the Torah says that a chaziyah, the chazim, the chorin not only can't blow for the congregation, but he can't even blow for himself. While when it comes to the Megillah, so he certainly can read for himself, just he can't read for the congregation. And then we discuss the third mahalach, that Salvation can suggest, but we discussed in the Shepherdah Tzatzvi, that maybe there is a Maisa HaMitzvah and the Akim HaMitzvah, and the Kiyah is the Maisa, the listening is the Shmiya. And that's therefore the machlokes is the brach on the maisa or is the brach on the kiyum, as we find in other areas of halacha as well. And that could affect other things. If we say the shofar is not a chetzer shel mitzvah, so it could affect the whole shaila of mitzvah habavi aveira, the Rambam's position that the sound of the shofar is not subject to psula in the kol and gazel, and it could affect the question of whether you have to be touching the shofar or blow the shofar. Question where the shofar is asur b'hana, all of that all goes around the issue of whether the shofar is a chetzah shel mitzvah, which goes to the question essentially of what is the mitzvah for the chetzah to be identified. And then we mentioned the fourth mahalach, which is not so different, just comes from a different style of learning, the safa shofar as opposed to bris, that the Abenezer asked, why is it that many use the tongue of the shofar when the brach is being made? And he suggested that mitzvahs in general, even if they have a passive notion to them, a passive concept, but they can't be simply passive. There has to be an action associated with it. That's why when it comes to mitzvah sefer Torah, it can't be inherited. It has to be either written or purchased. There's got to be some action done. And so too, when it comes to shofar, the mitzvah is really about listening, but there has to be a tkiyah because that's necessary for the mitzvah to exist. So then that means that really the mitzvah becomes both tkiyah and shmiyah, and the bracha could have been on either one, but we prefer to make the bracha on shmiyah because that's the concept of the mitzvah. So it means we'll pass up the shofar to make the bracha on the sound, so we want to cover up the shofar just like we cover up the challah Friday night. And the Minchas Elazar took great issue with this, didn't think it was correct at all, and he argued on it. And we mentioned the fifth mahalach, that essentially a simple mahalach would say that it's a combination between the two, like the Ksav Sof and the Yonchua, and then the sixth mahalach, like the build on the comment of the Nitziv by Sukkah, but the Nitziv writes that there is a concept called Hechshu Mitzvah, Suv Bekra, that's an act as a preparation for the mitzvah. If it's not the mitzvah itself, but it is mentioned in the Chumash, has an extra status as kind of the quasi-mitzvah, which has a couple of nafaminas, including mitzvah Moyosim Meshuchel and the like. So maybe that's what will give the extra status to the Baal Togeya. He's doing the mitzvah like the rest of us, but he's also performing the Hechshu Mitzvah Ksuv Bakra, so he'll get extra credit for that. We mentioned the Negev and Subis, and there's some who suggest that's also the relevant category for mitzvah of Kiddushin, that even the Rishonim who don't believe it's a mitzvah might acknowledge that Kiddushin is a Hechshu Mitzvah Ksuv Bakra, it's necessary for Puravu, and it has its own mitzvah status, quasi-mitzvah status to the Hechshu Mitzvah, which could explain the Gemara's application of the term of mitzvah Yosin Shlucho to Kiddushin. And then I just wanted to suggest a little bit differently, that the view that the mitzvah is tekiah rather than shmiah, maybe that we don't want it to be passive, and maybe the whole point of the shofar is that we should own the moment, that we should make sure to realize what's going on and to take hold of it, and that the idea of the alarm clock could be understood a little bit differently, not to rouse you from your sleep, but to make sure you don't fall back asleep. That's the point. And that's also what we're going for in Elul and in Rosh Hashanah, that in both cases we recognize that the fleeting time is precious and that we should be able to use this impetus to keep us awake, to keep us active, so that we can accomplish what we need to during these Yemei HaDin. Alright, so we'll stop there. Wish everyone a wonderful day. So tomorrow we'll continue with the second paragraph of Tzuvos and the issues with Ne'amanus, the issues of how exactly we're working out that machlokes between them, and we'll head towards the last days of Elul.